VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody, warmest welcome to the RUP, the Times and Sunday Times podcast. We love you all out there. We hope you're doing well, or as well as can be expected. Thank you for staying with us in such amazing numbers during the lockdown. And the first thing to say today is that we know, obviously, there are bigger issues in this world. And horrendously, the people lost to coronavirus in the UK now amount to over 10,000, which is absolutely salutary. Today, we are one-on-one with none other than Damien Hopley, Chief Executive of the Rugby Players Association. Hoppers has 800 current players, men and women, 400 past players. It's become a very, very significant organisation in the game, maybe the most significant. Hoppers, the first thing, our spies say that yesterday you crossed a major Rubicon.
The threshold, I had a big figure change, Jonesy, and that's not about my waist. I turned 50, and so if you could speak softly today, that would be very helpful.
I see. So even in lockdown, you still found a way to celebrate.
Well, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Virtual drinking on Zoom, and a lot of old legends were raising a glass to me on a brilliant WhatsApp that the irrepressible Peter Scrivener has set up. So people from all over the world, Craig Dowd, Mike Friday Lawrence, obviously, and various others. So it was a very a special day, and I've really felt the love coming from all around the world. So really,
oh, brilliant, excellent. Just for the younger people out there, Damien was a fantastic player for Wasps and England. I think it was three caps. But I was once with some younger colleagues of Damien in an RPA office. And when I said what a great player he was, they all started giggling. That was because they never watched him play. But sparing his blushes, Damien Hopley was a fierce centre, very difficult to stop. Could easily have won more than three caps. But Damien, almost like presaging what was to come in the future, you had to retire at 26 due to injury, and you had this sort of awkward transition, which you were then going to encounter again in so many of your members.
Yeah, I mean, it was heartbreaking, to put it mildly, because suddenly you're on this trajectory to sort of play club and international rugby. I was very lucky to have a great club at Wasps, and you know, Will Carling and Jeremy Guscott were sort of the two incumbents and obviously fantastic players in their own right. So it was a bit of a waiting game. And then as soon as the game went professional and those two looked like they were going to be stepping aside, I basically banjoed my knee, captaining the sevens team in Hong Kong. And eight operations later, the surgeons couldn't put me back together again. So that was that. And it was a very difficult time, I have to say, Jonesy, because my life sort of stopped, and I've likened it to a bereavement in many ways. And I now look at it in terms of helping other players who go through that very difficult physical and mental trauma. And here we are, 20 years on, and making a big difference in the game.
Absolutely. But do you also feel that in at the moment, with the country suffering, that I don't want to big up rugby too much, but rugby does play a part in teams at times like this. I mean, the social media is packed full of people that we know or rugby people contributing in some ways and in all areas of the game. And you think that Mark Jennings, formerly of Sale, who you've done so much work with, great work with is doing an indoor marathon for four consecutive days. And like Andrew Cotter, the brilliant commentator, has become a global sensation by commentating on his two dogs. So there's something about the rugby heartbeat which is helping to see us through at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things we lose sight of sometimes, particularly in the professional game, is there are some fantastic characters involved around the clubs. And as you say, they do an awful lot of work locally around development, around charity, looking after their own. So I think this has really brought out a fantastic element of the game that those of us who are involved in it know exists. But even the Wasps players started the whole Make That Call program, which is now going across the Premiership. And just to see current players reaching out to fans, talking to them, picking up the phone to them, I think it's been a fantastic effort and something we should rightly be proud of.
The world is struggling to get to grips with the horrible virus at the moment, but it's caused a massive hiatus in sport. And I just wondered, Hoppers, if you feel like an Aunt Sally at the moment, it's your job to provide your members, your professional players, with the best remuneration package you possibly can for all the work they put in. But then you have to talk to the rugby authorities in your capacity as chief executive about replaying tons of postponed games. No one that I can see wants to do anything other than play all their postponed games, which I think is slightly cavalier. But then you have to be mindful, above everything else, of the welfare of your players and that the people who bail out rugby by playing all these games will be your members. So is this your toughest time in charge of the union? Because, I mean, it must be like being pulled apart by horses.
The word unprecedented is being used left, right and centre, and rightly so. And as you said at the outset, Jonesy, that there are people losing their lives and there's some catastrophic issues going on. So that puts a lot into perspective. But we've had an extraordinary 3 weeks as a sport trying to come to terms with the financial freefall that the world is in, and everyone recognises that. We've all become experts in furloughing in the space of about 2 weeks, and trying to understand how that impacts. But I guess the most important thing from our perspective is always marrying up the playing and commercial challenges. And certainly I saw Ben Youngs come out this week talking about playing midweek rugby and what that does. And apart from the Lions and World Cups, we don't really see a lot of midweek rugby. So there's such conjecture at the moment where there's a dearth of information or certainty. It's very, very difficult to sort of crystal ball where this will all end up. But clearly, you know, clubs don't want to ruin their players. Players want to feel like they're playing in the right framework in terms of number of games. But there is a commercial issue that I think is incredibly challenging. And one of the issues I guess we've been dealing with in that short space of time since the pay cuts were announced around players taking a very mature and reasonable view, saying, yeah, it's not particularly pleasant to take a 25% pay cut, but actually, if it means the club survives and can endure beyond this current pandemic, then that's the right decision. So we've had some, you know, as you imagine, it's quite a heated environment, but it's trying to, I guess, find the right balance between long-term survival of the sport and making sure that the players aren't playing daily games or whatever will look like when it comes back. But certainly trying to just get as much information as possible, educate the players, working closely with the clubs and the RFU to try and navigate our way through this difficult time.
I completely understand that. But, you know, I was just ringing around loads of people last weekend for a piece I did yesterday, and I cannot find anyone, not one person, who wants to call off one game. And this is what is worrying me, because, you know, when you hear people say, well, we're going to have five international before Christmas, five after. But for instance, I'm sure he wasn't trying to be confrontational, but Bill Sweeney announced that there could be the Japanese tour in October, which is exactly when the Heineken Cup want to play their big game. So something surely has got to give here. And as I say, you're kind of the man in the middle trying to balance it all out.
Yeah. And listen, I think this is the challenge, because you've obviously got the international game, which funds a lot of the game, not only England, but globally. So it's trying to find the right balance between developing and growing the club game and ensuring that the international game is still thriving. Certainly, it looks like the Japan tour won't happen in the summer. So, therefore, you know, if we're back playing, and there are all sorts of sort of physiological issues as well. I heard you talking to Mark Evans and the guys about it last week. But when can the players get back into the gym to start preparing themselves for because of the return of the season? So there are a number of plates spinning currently based on timing. You know, would you play throughout the summer? Based on time off now, getting the players back in the gym. But I think common sense has to prevail with all of this. And one thing we often talk about is, you know, no club wants to run their players into the ground, given the value they represent. So it is about trying to find the right balance. But as you say, the welfare, you know, there's a lot of talk about it, but it's always that great thing, player welfare is the number one priority. I'm not convinced it always is, if I'm honest with you. But it is trying to find that balance. And it's around squad sizes. There's all sorts of issues around contractual issues. You know, we read Johnny Mays going back to Gloucester, where he'll get a fantastic reception, I'm sure, at King's Home. But if the season is moving into July, you know, does that mean he moves to play for Gloucester instead of Tigers? Also, there's so many different things that are really starting to fall up now on the back of this pandemic.
It's your job to be open to everyone, all sections of the game. People keep mentioning the word player welfare. Say, for instance, so one of the national unions says this is our stuff for this season. We're going to have this game, that game, that game, and of course our priority is player welfare. Have those words become devalued by repetition? Because they certainly haven't been upheld by anyone doing anything about it.
Yeah, it's the repeat to fade effect, isn't it? And I think with what we're finding now, encouragingly, is players are becoming increasingly aware of their voice, which is the most important asset they have as a group, but also their own welfare and looking at the number of games, the psychological, physical, mental toll placed upon them. And I think there's a much more enlightened conversation happening in this space now because players are much more aware of, you know, what they can and can't do, the demands being made on them. But I think sometimes player welfare is, well, let's play another international and raise some more money for the game. I'm not quite sure that stacks up, if I'm honest with you. But I also think there are opportunities on the back of all of this to probably relook at how we do things in rugby and you know, the quart in the pint pot argument that we've had for a long time in terms of length of season, number of games, all these sorts of things, and actually have some really informed medical, sports science, you know, welfare recovery, all these sorts of things. Let's have those discussions and try and find a way forward.
Do the players feel a little bit bruised at the moment? I remember when just about a week ago when the issue of salary cuts and etc. came up in football. And of course, people suddenly started saying to the footballers, "For God's sake, you're on whatever it is, 500,000 a week. Why don't you take a 20% cut and all that sort of thing?" But without actually saying the same to bankers and you know, big businessmen and journalists or anything, do you think that players have been slightly caught in the and your members have been slightly caught in the crossfire here? Because they're not exactly. Not all rugby players are on $500,000 a season. In fact, hardly any are. They've been sort of almost hung out to dry.
I think sportsmen, particularly the footballers, became very easy targets in all of this at a time when there was a lot of finger pointing. I think what's really important to point out is, you know, players are accepting of a 25% wage cut. It's not a deferral. It's not a you know, we'll get this back at some point. It is about the survival and longevity of their employers and the clubs. But I also think that, you know, the average salary in the Premier League football is £260,000 a week, and the average annual salary in rugby is about £140,000-£150,000 a year. So it's not like for like. But I do think, not speaking of footballers, but I just sort of feel that they became quite an easy target in all of this. But I think with rugby, you know, again, whilst the start around this whole wage cut could have been handled slightly differently, we felt what you've got now is we've been on calls for the last 3 weeks, talking with the league, talking with the players, and the general consensus is, and you know, a number of players recognise that they have to do this in terms of trying to keep the clubs afloat. There are challenges, I guess, around this, Jonesy, with, you know, what I'd call the bookends, so the younger academy players who would not be on a lot of money and they're getting a 25% wage cut, or at the other end of the scale, the guys who are retiring probably with no chance of getting picked up because not many clubs are recruiting at the moment, or they're coming off contract. So there are some individual challenges around that, again, that we're just trying to explore with the league what we can do. And, you know, it's a very, very difficult situation around those players coming off contract because, you know, the employment market has sort of crumbled, really.
Sure, sure. When you started out and the RPA, or then it was called the PRA, was formed and developed, no doubt you had some really, really tough times. You know, the unions weren't used to negotiating with a union, a players' union, et cetera, et cetera. But did you ever dream when you started, Damien, that you'd be working so hard, not just for the welfare of your members, but to battle depression and even suicide thoughts and the pains of transition, et cetera, because that has now become, in the RPA, a massive part of your activities.
Yeah, the mental health play is very interesting. I guess all I have to draw on is my own experience, as I talked about at the beginning. You know, I did liken my injury to a bereavement. Everything was heading in a certain direction. Suddenly your life stops and you stop being that person you are. So whether it's your self-esteem, your own physical mental health. As I said, I had a number of surgeries. I had my 10th one just in September last year on my knee. And, you know, from that perspective, it's just very difficult to try and compartmentalize all the things that are going on. And I think what we've seen over that time is I've always sort of maintained this, that from a mental health perspective, obviously the pressure on players is growing season on season. And it's just becoming harder and harder. And the fear of failure and all the other, I guess, pressures around become very difficult. So when we launched our Lift the Weight mental health campaign about 3 years ago, and Jonesy, you were very supportive of it, and it's sort of really grown from there. So we have a 24-hour, fully confidential counselling service funded through our charity Restart, which does that and an awful lot more. I'll come on to that later, but certainly around the mental health piece, just having the opportunity for players to talk to individuals on a confidential basis makes it a huge service. And we're seeing a steady growth. And what we're actually definitely seeing around this time is probably more demand for that as players' futures are being tested and they just don't know what that will look like.
One of the things I was going to ask you was that, you know, around the time Lift the Weight and Lift the Weight number two and then moving on to Restart Rugby to raise funds, you know, the helpline was sort of, well, not ringing off the hook, but I've got an incredible number of calls. And so are you saying that you detect that the players at this time are actually more anxious than ever?
I think so, because I think there's such uncertainty. And if you look at any professional sports career, you know, the certainty you have is your contract. And that's for a fixed term, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is. And suddenly, if either you're coming off that at the end of a period around the pandemic, or just generally, if there's uncertainty around your future, I think that's what really can stimulate anxiety amongst the players. So whether it's injury, it could be personal relationships at home. There's all these sorts of things that just feed into the players' overall mental health and well-being. So the more we can do, I guess, to prophylactically get the players talking about their own situations, sharing as much as they can in what has always been a pretty sort of alpha environment, I think can only be good to stimulate that conversation and get that going. And then obviously having the professional backup of the confidential helpline and then the additional services that we offer in that space as well means that the players are well looked after.
I guess people who are slightly new to rugby may be listening would say, look, why are you saying this at the time of coronavirus? But actually, you know, in terms of rugby and sport, you know, the game's lost Dan Vickerman to suicide. And, you know, you were kind enough to put me in touch with Mark Jennings, who had a horrendous life and experience, and you managed to bring him back from the brink, etc. So we are talking very, very serious problems in the normal walk of life here, aren't we?
Yeah, you know, 1 in 4 people, Jonesy, suffer from mental health issues. And in all the discussions we've had around Restart and getting more funding and fundraising into our charity, it's been about how much work we can do in the mental health sector. And certainly, I guess the concern is that if players aren't talking about these things or sharing or finding the right safe environment to discuss it, it can have some horrendous impacts and effects. And as you mentioned there, a handful of players who have taken their own lives, and that has a massive knock-on effect in terms of their families, the clubs, all this sorts of things. So it's really a duty of care on behalf of the Players Association. But the game as a whole, and at the moment, concussion is our number one injury in rugby, and I've no doubt that mental health will surpass that. And it's a hidden illness, and we've seen the likes of John Kerwin bravely stepping up and talking about it. And I've had a number of conversations with players over the years. You talk very openly about the sort of journey they've been on and the challenges they've experienced, myself included. And it's just incredibly important to share that and make sure that it's front and centre when we're trying to look after the athletes.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
This sort of widest thing here that worries me a bit. Should we be looking at each other, everyone in the pro game, and everyone who's ever been involved in it, thinking, hang on, where did rugby go wrong here? Because surely, even in the professional era, at a time of high pressure, should we not have kept a little bit more balance in the game than we have?
And I think that's where the opportunity may well, from a very catastrophic and unfortunate situation that we're all in at the moment, I think that's where the opportunity may arise here for people to actually just take a breath, survey the landscape and say, well, where do we need to be in 5-10 years' time? There's obviously been a significant financial investment from CVC, the private equity group. So I guess, the definition of madness, doing the same things time and time again and expecting a different outcome. So I think it is the opportunity now to look at how we can probably structure things better. And that, for me, starts around the playing structure, the commercial and financial viability of the sports. And then one of our mantras at work is we want England to be the best place to play rugby in the world. And that's not necessarily about how much you get paid. It's about how much support you get off the pitch. It's about
Yes.
you're looked after. So we have our Gainline program, which is all about development, helping players look at interests away from rugby and pursuing those, not to the detriment of their rugby. It's really important. We've got a fantastic team headed up by Ben McGregor, and it's all about how can we help players with that transition, because it's going to happen at some point, whether that's injury, loss of contract, or at the end of a glorious career. Like someone like Simon Shaw, who had sort of 19, 20 plus years playing top flight rugby, but those are few and far between now. So how do we help those players move in? So it's not just always about the playing environment, it's actually about the entire piece and trying to get the players to invest time in themselves so that when that fateful day comes that they have to hang up the boots, they're sort of prepared for the next 30 years. There's a wonderful quote by a former NBA all-star player that sport's the only career that when you retire you have to get a job. And and there are only so many coaching and media jobs, and they're normally taken by the stars of the international setup. So it's just really important that as a sport, the focus is absolutely 100% on rugby. But we talked about at the outset the fact that there's some great characters in the game, and we need to try and help those people so that when they do finish, they can move on and find success in other careers.
The debate, you're talking about what you can do, what the game can do for players after retirement, etc. There are so many conversations to have. Are you convinced, Damien, that your platform is strong enough? In other words, will you be in every room where these conversations take place? Because if you're not, they may as well not have them.
That's a great point. And I think one of the things we've battled through over the years is to get ourselves in the room, sometimes with a crowbar. Remarkable how quickly you're invited in when the player's view is needed, and they're not invited in when it's not. So, but we've had some really positive, progressive conversations with the league about return to play, return to training, all the things that are up in the air at the moment. And certainly with the RFU and the likes of Bill Sweeney, Conor O'Shea, now back in the fold, it's a good environment to start talking about bigger issues that are player related, to try and address, you know, welfare, rest and recovery, mental health, all the things that are part and parcel of the everyday sort of rugby player's career. So yeah, we have to be in those rooms. It's as simple as that. And fortunately, there's enough enlightenment around the table, and that wasn't always the case. And I'm sure you could probably name a few people in that rather Luddite capacity.
I could name a few hundred, actually, if you want to.
Who wouldn't want the players involved? So that's the encouraging thing now, is that.
I know that, for instance, World Rugby has got a huge galaxy of business to do in all sorts of areas, and the global game and all that. But I'm just amazed when I was talking to PRL and the Heineken and EPCR this weekend, that, you know, they're not actually guaranteed to be in these rooms. Now, if the three professional leagues in Europe and not in the room with the players, every room where professional rugby is being discussed, well, surely someone is falling flat on their face, and World Rugby have become a secret rather than a kind of governing body.
I couldn't agree more, and I think it's just highly inefficient to not have all the stakeholders involved and engaged, and not have a sort of Chinese whispers, which has been how things have worked out. There's definitely with World Rugby now, we're part of the International Rugby Players, which is headed up by Omar Hassanein in Dublin, and that's the sort of collective of all the player associations around the world. And there's a good dialogue starting to rebuild at World Rugby. But for me, it just seems madness. It's been a bit cloak and dagger at times, hasn't it? And not getting everyone around the table just seems to be highly inefficient. And you know, whether that's clubs, provinces, players, unions, but actually, let's have those discussions out in the open rather than sort of clandestine. And but certainly, I think that the bigger picture here, Jonesy, is how can you walk away with everyone conceding something but actually getting something that they want? And
yes,
I think those conversations, if they're not happening now, they certainly will start happening based on the fact that the game is on the brink in many ways. And you know, we've had a number of conversations about survival of clubs. We're obviously looking at Australia, we're looking at US rugby and Chapter 11 filing there. So, you know, these are huge issues facing the overall global game. So therefore, I just believe that we should all be in the same room having those discussions in a constructive manner.
As a union, parts of your income come from the very rugby authorities that you have to speak to, you have to negotiate with. Is that tough? And would it be better that if the game could find some sort of independent funding, maybe direct from Rugby World Cup or something like that? Because you're always sitting down almost next to your paymaster, which must be really difficult.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this. So all of our trade union activity in the classic sense is funded by our player subscriptions. We have a number of commercial partners. So to sort of think that we're compromised in any way, and if you'd asked the hundreds, thousands of players we've helped over the years in terms of employment issues at their clubs, you know, we have made England the best paid players in the world since 2004 when we took over representing them. So to think that we go in there, accept the first offer the RFU give us, and then give them a big hug and have a gin and tonic is madness. So the challenge for us is, and we absolutely want to go in the direction of independent funding, so we want to look at a collective agreement based on trying to the model in New Zealand, Australia, and other sports is around having a collective agreement with the league and the RFU, carve out our funding from that. So it can't be seen to be a conflict. And, you know, we have 20 plus people working at the RPA these days, and it sort of irks us a wee bit that we're sort of said, oh, you know, you're compromised and, you know, you can, yes, you can never really get what you want, because, well, we have to remind some people that it's our players who actually generate over 80% of the RFU's income playing test matches. So, yes, you know, you could look at it from all sorts of ways, but we would never find ourselves in a position where we would compromise our integrity based on trying to just do a deal on behalf of the players or the clubs or the RFU. So, you know, we're fiercely proud of what we try and do as an organisation. We've been fronting up for our players since 1998, and we believe we're vital in the game. But certainly through a collective, we believe we can actually then have an independent funding source coming from whatever channel. And that obviously would help in terms of the optics around this. But I must reiterate that anyone who thinks we sort of go into those meetings with one hand tied behind our back,
understood,
needs a heads examining, because, you know, we're very passionate about what we do as an organisation and the players we represent. And we, as you said at the outset, we want the players to optimise not only their earnings throughout their careers, but also the off-field support they get. And that's a huge part of what we do as an organisation.
Damien, one thing we should do is, as well, is just before we go, is just talk about women's rugby, because you do have a large number of women's members now, and if there's one area which helps you keep your faith in rugby and what it was, it must surely be in the women's game. And the international team are going like a bomb, so committed, etc. Can we foresee a time when they will be able to bargain hard along with you and their employers for a decent salary? I mean, they're now, some of them are professional and doing reasonably well, but the way it's going, surely they'll be in a position to come to the party in terms of negotiations in some years' time.
Well, and I have to say, Jonesy, that the women in both 15 sevens are outstanding to work with. They really are fantastic, yeah, athletes, very organised, and we do a lot of work around the game line development programme in those setups. And I guess in the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen the emergence of full-time contracts. And as you say, I mean, they're fantastic on the field. They're great role models. The crowds are picking up. And I just think the boom in women's sport has been remarkable to witness over the last few years, certainly cricket, football and rugby. I think the challenge going forward now, and obviously there's new teams being put into the Tyrrells, which are aligning with the Premiership clubs, so Sale and Exeter are coming in there. So I think the alignment of the clubs is a really important part of the growth of women's sport, but also getting more crowds in and getting the fixtures aligned, put in the diary well in advance, sell out crowds, and increasing the commercial revenues that are coming into the game, because that can only be a good thing. Whilst it won't be at the level of the men in the foreseeable future, there's no reason why the women, given their huge success on the field, can't just drive more and more growth and commercial interest in the sport. But I have to say that they have been a pleasure to work with. I think they realise that they're in a really good position with the RFU. They're one of only a handful of teams globally who are full-time. And the way they've responded to that has been first class.
Brilliant answer. Can I just ask you two more things? First of all, just as a clarification, you were saying this earlier, what is the current situation with the likes of Johnny May and the people and Carl Zinkler, who are now apparently changing clubs almost like before the end of the season? Do you know, has that come to resolution?
Well, it hasn't, but my take would be, and the lawyers will be licking their lips, my take would be that if the contract ends on June 30th and the new contract starts July 1, is that the players will move. So you could have a situation whereby Kyle or Johnny could be playing for their new club in this current season. I think it'd be quite a challenge to unravel some of those contracts. But again, so those are the sorts of details that we're trying to deal with now with the league and try and address them so that there's some certainty. And again, I come back to this point around that the contract is the most important piece in all of this.
Yes.
Trying to get security for the players so they understand exactly the terms upon which they're not only playing but also going forward, what that looks like.
Are you optimistic about the challenge ahead in the next. I mean, we don't know when rugby will come back, but when we do know when it comes back, then basically you are really caught, not caught, but you really are in the middle of this. And, you know, what the players want should play a huge part. Are you optimistic for those times? And secondly, you've been in the pro game almost since it started. Would you be hesitant now if addressing young players and to encourage them whether or not to come into the pro game, knowing what you know about what it can do to people?
We have an academy induction day every year at rugby school where we get all the first-year academy students or players in, and we'll get former players back, current players. We'll talk about social media. We'll sort of say congratulations on becoming a professional rugby player. And now here are some of the not so nice things that happen around the sport. Just trying to educate them as best I can. But look, I think, you know, what an opportunity to, I think the sport will grow in the next 5-10 years. I think there will be a correction around the current situation we're in. But I think rugby will kick on from there. And I have great optimism around that. We came second in the Rugby World Cup. Eddie's staying on, and that squad isn't really going anywhere. So I feel great optimism about that. But certainly from the young people coming into the sport, I just think there's a very, very bright future.
The log jam that you're going to face when the game does come back, because you are really caught in the middle there.
We are, and everyone is, and I think we're all trying to make sense in a very uncertain world at the moment, which is difficult. And I think, again, it's just by clear dialogue around players, clubs, unions, that we're actually, I think we will see a strong return for rugby, but we know there's a lot of questions that need answering. But those are the big challenges in the short term, is to make sure the clubs can all survive this period, because I think it's going to, depending on when the game comes back, I think it's going to be a very, very difficult time for everyone.
You may look 50 now. You could look 60 in a year or two.
I look about 60 after yesterday's online.
Damien Hopley of the RPA, thank you very much.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.